I think that I am very beneficial for Canadian economy. And I listed those 5 points, talking about my early startup, which I did in Pakistan, that I'm entrepreneurial. And then I tell them that I have higher education, like MBA. And then I also mentioned the driver's license, because I had the UK driver license. I got it while I was studying. So I'm like, hey, I have a UK driver license, which I can convert with the Canadian full driver license. So I have an advantage over other applicants who are applying for this program, that I can get a job outside Toronto area and I can get up and running straight. So I can be easily integrated in Canadian society. So I remember that. And the result of that was that my application was accepted and I got an invite within 4 months. And normal time frame was 13 months. That's how I still remember that. So if you make a case, if you do good marketing, it works.
Hey everybody, welcome to the GMI Rocket Show. Today is episode number 69. I am your host, Roman Zelchenko. I'm a former immigration attorney turned entrepreneur. I'm the founder of Laborless, which is an immigration tech startup automating H-1B compliance, and also the founder of GMI Rocket, which is a digital marketing agency for the immigration and mobility space, and also, of course, brings you this show. Today, I am very excited to have a digital nomad, entrepreneur, tech founder on the show. Our guest today is Danish Sumro, who is the founder and CEO of VisaDB.io. We're going to learn all about VisaDB.io and about Danish. He's got a really interesting and, first of all, an amazing lifestyle, because he has been a digital nomad for some time, has truly lived in many, many parts of the world and worked in many parts of the world, which is kind of a dream for so many of us, I guess. So I'm really excited to hear that, hear about that and you know, his experiences working for various companies and then having an entrepreneurial sort of itch and launching a venture before this and then eventually VisaDB.io. VisaDB.io effectively connects individuals who want to live around the world with immigration experts and others who are also from around the world to learn about how, if and how they can move to those countries and different requirements that they might need, et cetera. So very excited for this conversation. In today's work from home and work from anywhere world, I feel like this is exactly the kind of technology and services that we need. So without further ado, Danish, thank you so much for being here. And you're in Brazil right now, I believe, right? So thank you for tuning in from Brazil.
Very welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Roman. Really, really appreciate it. I'm really grateful for you to invite me to this great show. I learned about this show on LinkedIn, and now I'm here. So such a privilege. Appreciate it.
So thank you for that. Before we jump in, just for folks who are here watching, listening, as always, please let me know who you are, where you're at, you know, where you're tuning in from, I suppose, where in the world. And then, of course, like what you do, where you work. I mean, give your company or organization a shout out. I always love to know like who's participating. And of course, as we go, please ask any questions for Danish. I mean, if you have any questions for me, of course, feel free. But, you know, today is about Danish. So please ask, ask away. So Danish, I know you were, so you mentioned you were born in Pakistan. You've lived all over the world, and we will get to that. But you were born in Pakistan. And how did you, I don't know, like what was your kind of early life sort of immigrant story? Yes. You were born there. Where did you move? When did you move, et cetera? Yeah.
Appreciate it, Roman. So yes, actually, I'm born and raised in Pakistan, the city of Karachi, which is the seventh largest city by population in the world. So I grew up, you can say, on the streets with a lot of people and from the very poor background, you know, and when you come from this humble background, you learn to, you have to become a resourceful, you know, you need to find opportunities, you need to capitalize on them. So many other people like me in Pakistan, they're always hunting for opportunities. And same story here. Telling you a little about my first venture when I was very young, and did a small startup there in Pakistan, and which, you know, got me some money. And I ask my brother, where should I invest this money? He's like, invest on you means get educated more. So I went to England to do my MBA. So that was my first, like the first time outside Asia, you can say. I've been to Dubai, but this was the first major cultural shift or to be honest, entering a new world, United Kingdom, and especially studying in a very good institution. So that was an incredible experience. So that's how I would say I started. That was my little bit of early journey. And then after doing my MBA, I'm like, okay, where are the opportunities? Again, looking for opportunities. So where shall I go? So Australia, US, Canada, or the UK, where I can stay longer. And then Canada stand out, and they had a program where they select 1,000 top highly skilled people. I applied in that and, kind of sell to Canadian government that why I'm the best for their country. And I was awarded Canadian citizenship.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I do want to backtrack a little bit on that, because I want to hear about, what you did in Pakistan before you left. But I'm curious, in this application for, this high-skilled Canadian program, what were you bringing to the table? Was it business entrepreneurial skills? Was it something else?
Yes, same. Entrepreneurial and marketing and advertising skills, they had a category back then. I'm talking about 2010, mm-hmm. So 11 years ago, and there was a shortage of business entrepreneurial people there. And it's highly competitive. Everybody wants to go to Canada, right? And so I knew that I am competing against it. It was a very funny story, because I called the UK. In the UK, I was a student, and I called an immigration expert there. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, I am really interested in this program. I think I can qualify. And he told me that you may not be, because mostly the couples combine make certain points to qualify in that program, and right. You are a single guy. So I'm not sure, you may fall short with some points. So, but I'm like, I did MBA and I did major in marketing. I should be able to market myself to Canadian. So I will take my own assignment, and I studied something, and then I present a file. And, I still remember that normally you create a, immigration file documents, education documents, criminal background, everything. And then I added a letter on top of it. For the it was addressing the case manager. Literally, it says to the Canadian case manager, and I wrote literally, I still remember the 5 points I think that I am very beneficial for Canadian economy. And I listed those 5 points, talking about my early startup, which I did in Pakistan, that I'm entrepreneurial, and then I tell them that I have higher education like MBA. And then I also mentioned the driver's license, because I had the UK driver license. I got it while I was studying. So I'm like, hey, I have a UK driver license, which I can convert with the Canadian full driver license. So I have an advantage over other applicants who are applying for this program, that I can get a job outside Toronto area and I can get up and running straight. Mm. So I can be easily integrated with Canadian society. So I remember that. And the result of that was that my application was accepted, and I got an invite within 4 months. And normal time frame was 13 months. That's how I still remember that. So if you make a case, if you do good marketing, it works.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about the driver's license? And it's a great point. You can commute for work. You can just take opportunities more quickly. That's pretty brilliant. I love it. And congrats. I mean, that's really cool. So I want to backtrack a little bit, because I think it's really great to learn about, entrepreneurship can be taught. I think for some people, it's something that's maybe more innate and something that they really kind of feel when they're younger. They just want to build businesses and start businesses. I'm curious, before we even get to your startup, like as a kid, I guess, were you really studious? Were you like, learning, sitting and reading textbooks and math and science and things like that? Or I don't know, like what kind of, or were you a little bit more maybe social and you like to hustle and I don't know. What were you like?
The second category defines me very well. Uh-huh. And I was a kid. I was, shouldn't say that, but I was into hacking, because you're in Pakistan. And so my mom gave me a computer. That's the thing in India and Pakistan. That's why the tech talent comes from there, because that is the only, looks like a way out of poverty, that, if you learn this thing, this computer, if you know this, that's your way out of poverty, or it can open the doors. So in every family, that's why it's considered very important to learn technology or to learn anything which has a good future and opportunity for the whole families or whole generations, to be honest. So I was also given a computer in my family. The computer arrived very early in 1993. So you're a teenager, young kid, Pakistani, you don't do a lot, you know, like, so you have your computer and you are just with it all the time. And so, yeah, I was, you know, into hacking. I was a gamer and I was a very social person, you know, and I used to be a professional gamer, by the way, which also like Counter-Strike. So it's a team game. You play with five people, and I was the clan head, you can say, because I formed the head clan, and then I was also managing the team. So that was my early experience, you can say, of working with the team member and making everybody, you know, to work for the same goal. So yeah, that was a little bit of early like gaming, very extrovert outsider, going out, and also I love to connect resources. So if I see someone is looking for something and the other side is looking, I would love to connect them to, on like just like a courtesy level. But when I started growing older, I noticed that, okay, I also need resources. So if it makes sense to generate value for all the parties involved. So I did few things. I sold CDs I exported actually clothes to Yemen, and it's a very, very interesting story because I was too young to have even my, like I was under 18, and I used my brother's friend, you know, license to export clothing. And then as a gamer, I was with, you know, I was with computers all the time. And I noticed that in Pakistan, all the gaming zones runs all the gaming. There's like gaming zones in Pakistan or India where you go there, internet cafe, and you play games. And so my first, like your question was, my first bigger entrepreneurial success, I would say, is that I noticed that in Pakistan, gaming zones work from 9 until 9. And after, in the night, they just close because the whole thing is shut. And I noticed one of my friends was working in a call center for the United States, but they work in the night, you know, and he always come at like 10 o'clock with the fully office dress. I'm like, dude, where are you going at 10 o'clock? You should be going home. He's like, no, I'm going to office because my office works in the night because we work, you know, for overseas, for the US. So something clicks in my mind. I'm like, okay. These gaming zones are idle in the night and this call center are open. Why don't we, you know, like we should be, you know, if we open the call center in the gaming zone, that could work. And that clicks and that's like, okay. And then I started, you can say, the first call center. And I actually hired this person who was going to the office. I'm like, you know, whatever you're getting there, you'll become a call center manager. Join me. Let's do this venture. And we did this. And then we turned five other gaming zones into call centers. And so that was my first entrepreneurial journey. And then all of a sudden we had 70 people working in five different offices, the game zones offices. Right. And that made us a very good amount of money for Pakistani standard. I was actually, you can say, millionaire, you can say.
Wow, that's amazing. Just so I can understand it better, the idea is that the gaming zones already had computers, they had desks, they had everything. And that's exactly what the call center employees needed, except at night, the gaming centers were completely empty. Were the computers in the gaming zone better than typical computers at the call center?
Oh, absolutely. Right? That was my point. I'm like, these are the top-notch computers with graphic cards, with amazing audio, right? We just need to plug internet. They are connected very well networking because it was a team game and you need a low latency. So it was a top-notch networking, sound, graphics. We just need to plug internet. And these are the high-quality office workstations for call center employees.
And so when you approached the gaming zones, like how did you actually, because it's really, really fascinating. It's a brilliant idea because you're taking, you know, existing resources that are sitting idle and then there's a demand for those resources and you're just bridging the gap. Who did you approach first? Did you approach companies first and say, hey, do you need more call centers? Or did you approach the gaming zones and say, listen, here's an idea. Let me go find some U.S. companies who might want to use your space at night.
Yeah. That's an incredible question, because that's exactly what my thinking thought process was. Okay, who to, it's like a chicken and egg problem thing. Right. And who to reach out first. And I don't know, I thought that American companies, because my friend is doing it, so I can also do it. So that is kind of secure. What I need that the call center owner, because to run this operations, we need these resources, internet and the gaming machines and everything. And someone is willing to trust us to give us this call center in the night, right? Mm-hmm. It's like high equipment and they don't want to give you. But luckily I was a gamer and people knew me. So the gaming zone owners know me, that this is the gamer guy, a very funny social gaming guy. And now I went to the first gaming zone who I thought that know me more, much better and trust me. And I offered him this proposal that, hey, can you give me your call center for 2 months and give us the internet as well? And I can generate some income for you. And he asked me how much. I'm like, I cannot promise, but it will be not zero. So, you know, and he's like, okay, that's pretty good. I'm not losing anything. As long as I'm not losing anything, I'm like, yeah, bills will be covered and it will not be zero. So he said, okay, go do it. And of course, once I secure that, now I went onto the second part to talk to the American companies to get this contract. Mm-hmm. And I started calling, randomly, I started Googling and, you know, being good at computer, it actually helps. I just found directories straight away and found connections and start dialing. So first I was a call center agent, you can say myself, of course, as an offer to sell, to get this contract. Everybody I call the resort, they just hang up because they listen a Pakistani accent, like, hello, sir, give me the contract. And I was also very young, 21, right? I don't know how to do the business communication. Like properly American style, but I was very good in etiquettes, phone etiquettes. Hey, sir, is it a good day? It's a good time to talk to you. And so many people hang up, but one person, she waited. That was the first time that I said this whole sentence and nobody hang up or say no, thank you.
Right.
There was silence. And that gave me, I'm like, okay, I got it. I thought, okay, I'm glad. I'm like, hey, did you hear me? She's like, yes. Tell me more about it. And then I told her that, hey, I have a call center. I have workstations, 8 to 10 workstations, and I can do the marketing campaign for your resort like it's happening in Pakistan in this company, which is where my friend was working. So she's like, we don't know this company, but we know a lot of operations are running in Pakistan. So we would be interested in your proposal. I'm like, yes, I can send you a proposal. Can I have your email address? And, you know, that's how. So I submitted the proposal and Heather Wagner, I should say, because I'm so grateful for her. And she really trusted and she said, okay, let's do this. Her husband was really anti because we didn't have any experience. We don't sound like my English was not good. Of course, the people working were incredible in English that time. So yeah, that's how we started. That was an incredible journey.
I'm curious. This is really awesome. So, you know, Heather and this company, by the way, do you remember what the company was? If you can share that it was, or like what kind of company?
Yeah, it was a vacation, like a timeshare and selling vacation packages.
Yeah.
So the two products, timeshare and selling vacations, is we were not selling it, to be honest. We were just appointment setters.
Got it.
So it was a high, like, you know, you're selling these big packages. So they just want to have you set appointments for the managers who were in America, in the United States. Mm-hmm. And these managers, just like a virtual assistant for setting up calls, you can say. And if that appointment goes through, then they will give us money.
I see. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you had to find the people to actually pick up the phone and be the...
Yeah, so right. That's where my friend, and that's where I am a big, big fan of network. And because I have seen many times all the projects I did, they went success or something happens because of the team or the network. So this gaming network of my gaming zone and this guy who's going to the office, he was the key because I knew him. And I said, hey, how many people are working in your office? He's like, 50. I'm like, okay, how many we can cut? And he's like, I don't know how much you can pay, you know? I'm like, I don't know, but let me catch you first. You know, like you are working as an agent. How about becoming a floor manager? And, you know, let's make a team. You're the floor manager and we will have some revenue share and you will also have a salary. And he's like, okay, I don't get a revenue share there. I'm not a floor manager. I'm in. He's like straight away. And then I'm saying, let's form a team. And do you know some best people? He's like, yeah, I know best people. They're very expensive, but let's find the new people and mm-hmm. train them because they're easier and I can train them. So we hired some, so in Pakistan, India, there are American schools or British schools. And the students there, I mean, to be honest, they are like, they are studying American system. They sound American. They are, it's like from the other side of the society. So they would, they wanted to earn money. You know, there are no students job in India and Pakistan, right? There is no culture of students working. They all just free. Mm-hmm. So they went to see an opportunity to work with, directly with mm-hmm. Americans. And they're like, sign us up. And then that's how the first team of six people were formed with the one floor manager and one me as running the whole show.
Wow. That is really cool. That's really cool. I love it. It's such a, what a great example of combining, you know, building a bridge and building a company through that. And then how long did you run this company for? I mean, did you eventually just sell it, just turn it, you know, just down, close it?
So in total 3 years. So what happened in that, it was like 2006 till 2009-ish, like that. What was happening? We saw it after a year. I saw the decline, and I, as an entrepreneur, I'm like, okay, let's run it until it runs. But then internet was getting, you know, like big around that time. I still remember 2007, Twitter came out, and I saw a lot of marketers in that industry, in that application, start tweeting their packages and making websites, making landing pages, and running online ads. So phone sales started to decline, especially you can say setting appointments, because they said, okay, give us some time and we will come back to you. And when they go online, they have many other deals. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that, okay, either two things, either we move to that new medium, which is an internet marketing, or we pivot or something. So I presented this to the company. But they were a very traditional company, old school company. They mm-hmm. just believe in direct calls. So I saw that it's coming. So 3 years, I knew that it has a lifeline. After 2 years, we knew it's declining. But we had an amazing team, 70 people. So we kept it running for a while. But after 2 years, I saw that it's declining. So at that point of time, I have generated some massive savings. And now this business is declining. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so eventually we finished it in 2009.
And so what was your next move? So that is that when you started to think about, okay, maybe I should go back to school or something like
that? Yeah. So as I said, coming from the poor background, you don't even dream. You don't even think about going abroad, right? And from my family, nobody has studied abroad. No one in my whole, you can say, tuition, especially abroad, higher education. So I, as I said, my brother, he gave very good advice that, hey, you have you have some money you generated, very good, well done. And you're just 24, you're just 25, and invest the savings on you instead of buying property or starting something. So that hits me. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, figure it out, but just invest in you. And then I decided, as I said, that I noticed that I am good in marketing and sales and in business. I just need to get a formal education within the same domain so that I can grow further. So MBA was a very right fit, was perfect, MBA marketing. And I invested most of my savings. I was like, okay, let's do that. And then I went to the UK and I even did not work during my studies, which is very hard in the UK. You have to do a student job, but I had enough savings for me to, which can sustain me. So I just focus on studies, improving my communication skills, especially English. So I had an English accent because I was learning English there. So I used to talk like that. So I learn, I improve my communication skills. I build networking MBA, which is the main goal of most of the MBAs.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you studied undergrad, you went to undergraduate studies in Pakistan?
Yeah. Okay. In Pakistan, I did in commerce and economics.
Got it. Okay, cool. So you already had that background, and so you were building upon it. And you went to, where did you go to in UK?
So I go to, it's like a University of Wales Institute, Cardiff. Is it UWIC?
Right.
Yeah, it's in UK, there's a top 100 or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, was not like, I was so grateful that even I'm just going abroad to study.
That's cool. So you got to live in Wales. That's really cool.
No, I actually, they had a campus in London.
Ah, okay.
So yeah, so I studied in London, and again, living in a big city, and especially London, it was such a like sort of a dream. And you are now a student all of a sudden in London. So I was living the best time of my life.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's amazing. Wow. I love that story. You know, it's funny. It's the kind of thing where you think about, what is business? You know, sometimes business is building a thing or inventing a thing. And other times it's just, it's connecting existing things and creating new value out of it. And I love that as an example. Okay. So, so now you're out of Pakistan. You had this amazing experience building a business. You're now getting this higher education in the UK. Where do you go from there? Because I know, you know, eventually you sort of got into this idea of building what became VisaDB.io. But before that, you did have some, you know, sort of corporate jobs and you lived around the world. What was that first thing that you did sort of after you graduated from your MBA?
Yes. So I did some work as a student job. After 1 year, I did not do it. And after that, I work in the city of London. It's actually when I was first time I did like a tourist guide I did while I was writing my thesis. And I think I may be the only tourist guide at this London Bridge or the city of government there that who was not English. I don't even. And they were having a lot of Indian tourists, and they said, okay, I can be a very good, because they noticed that my communication and interpersonal skills are very well. So, and I would be a good choice. So I did that something. And within that, I did some marketing with their partners. So they have all these tourist sites in London and hotels, the city of London working with. Mm-hmm. And so I did some part of it to working with their partners and making sure that they have all the marketing stuff in their places and making sure they have all the inventory. So that was the first job. But as you know, that once you're an entrepreneur, you're always an entrepreneur. And on the side, I was thinking to build a chatting support. Like I noticed this call center is amazing, but now the sales are going away, but support is getting big. Mm. And chat support should be, you know, the next thing I should be working on. Made huge mistake that I went into building. I learned, you know, you learn from the mistake. So that didn't, I spent so much time and also money in it, but that didn't work out. And at that point, I have already started the Canadian immigration process while doing all this job, this trying this new business in the UK. And I also learned that in the UK, starting a business is totally different than in Pakistan. And surprisingly, you know, it's not formalized here in the UK. You need to have your proper company registry, tax ID. You need to get license and permits and everything. In Pakistan, it was easier. Even you need it, but there are workarounds. And, you know, things work out if you know people. So in the UK, I was facing these challenges that I'm a student and then I need to start a business. I am not on a work permit and I'm on a student visa. So these are the challenges. I made mistake. I started it, wasn't allowed. And then once I got one work permit, then it got late. I got Canadian process started. So then, of course, in 4 months, it arrived. I was not expecting it. And business was almost ready. All these licenses and registration and complete, but the Canadian immigration arrived. I'm like, okay, wow, this is dramatic. So I have to drop everything and move to Canada, or I have some time, I can still stay and build this thing or try to build this company here. But then I decided, I'm like, okay, eventually I have to move to Canada right now. So let's go there, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went there. And at this point, I thought that I should work. I should work, you know, because I have got this amazing degree. And of course, my saving is 1.5 years in London. I did not work. And I invested a lot of money in my education and everything and traveling Europe and, you know, get living like a life, enjoying life. And so I'm like, okay, let's get some formal corporate experience. Mm. And then I remember that I got to Microsoft through a third party and in Vancouver. And I was a training specialist. So through third party, not directly with Microsoft. Mm. And but I had all my business card. They gave me laptop. Everything was Microsoft, but it's just I was not directly employed by Microsoft. And I started training that. I did that part. And then Microsoft was launching Windows 8 in 2012, Windows Phone 8. That was a reimagining their whole brand. And then the opportunity arrived. And then I went into the sales with Microsoft directly. And I did that for sales work for 2 years, you can say, in Toronto and in there. And then I got an opportunity in another tech company. And that's where the digital nomad the journey starts, which I will tell you. That was the point when I joined this another tech company.
That's cool. It's also great. I mean, that is perfect corporate experience. Work for a large or for directly or indirectly a large organization like Microsoft. You learn the ropes in terms of marketing. You learn the ropes in terms of sales. You learn the ropes probably in terms of even just the corporate environment and what it's like to work in a place like that. I mean, I think that's super cool.
Absolutely.
Also, if you work at a company that gives you a laptop and you're new to the country, I mean, it's just another expense that you don't have to worry about. And those little things do matter. That's awesome. Okay, Dinesh, so you've had this amazing opportunity and experience working, with Microsoft, and then you got into another tech role, and that's where you're sort of idea to be a digital nomad came about. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, at this point, you went from being, growing up in Pakistan and having a business. And like you said, kind of the dream was to get away. And now at this point, you've already studied in the UK. You've traveled around at least parts of Europe. You're now in Canada, another international, travel and relocation. Were you not tired of moving? Did you feel like, man, I want to explore the whole world?
That's a great question, Roman. And to be honest, while after moving to the UK, I realized that traveling is just liberating. It's just like an amazing thing. And why not everybody's doing it? That literally I was thinking for a few years until I became a full-time digital nomad, that why don't people travel? Why they don't travel more? Everybody's traveling here and there. But this is just a life-changing experience. It enhances your life experience, or it makes you fall in love with life when you're traveling. Why not people are doing it? So I was I wasn't tired, but actually I was more. I want to do more, right? I'm now in Canada. I explore the whole West Coast from Santiago to Yukon, and while working, and then I'm like, okay, let's go to the East Coast, and still I'm working, and then I did the whole tour there, and I was just loving every part of it because it's so different. It's so amazing. And now the new company, tech company, they said, hey, we want you to work with us. And what do you want? I'm like, okay, let me remind my life when I was working there. You're driving 6 a.m. You're waking up. You're driving, shoving the bread in your mouth. Just quickly have to go. To work, and then you get there, work, and then you come back home. You're living for the weekend. I'm like, okay, I will join you tomorrow if you never ask me to come to office. So they're like, yeah, let's do that. So that was the start of my first remote job and sort of like a freedom. And because I realized in Canada, it's like only 2 weeks actually for first 2 years, if you're starting in a company or somewhere. It's only 2 weeks actually allowed for holidays. Mm-hmm. And then after 1 year through 3 years, now maybe it has changed, talking about like many years ago. And then it's 3 weeks And then you more years you put in, then you earn your early weeks off. I'm like, I need to find an alternative way. And even during that time, I had to, I was on a non-paid, I took non-paid holidays actually for 2-3 months, and I moved to Mexico and moved to Florida, you know, because after exploring Europe and part of West Coast, I couldn't just stay in Toronto and just work and do nothing. So I was doing here and there, but this, I saw an opening and I thought, okay, let's ask them, and they gave it. And for 6 months, now what I'm doing, Friday evening, actually Thursday night, I'm driving to Chicago from Toronto, and I am Friday morning, I'm working from there. And then Saturday, Sunday, I have, like, I'm exploring Chicago, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to Detroit, you know, like I'm exploring like that on the weekends, because I'm working remotely. Wherever I am, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. But of course, I cannot leave North America, right? So, so that was the problem. But I had like 80% of the freedom, and I'm enjoying. And after 6 months, you get greedy. Roman, you get greedy in traveling, you know. So I'm like, okay, what about 100% freedom? What about not North America? Why cannot I just be anywhere I want? And the company said, no, it's not possible because of the security, intellectual property. There's so many issues there. And you cannot be there. And I'm like, okay, can I risk? Now I have accumulated some more savings. So I'm like, all right, the new winter is coming, and I am not staying in cold East Coast of America for next 5 months. I or Canada, I need to go. And then I decided to leave in January, quit my job, move to Rio de Janeiro in 2015. And with the savings. So that was the start of my digital nomadic journey.
I want to say it's really impressive that in, I guess it was in 2014 or even before that, where you told the company, I will join you tomorrow if you don't force me to come into the office. I mean, that's something that people are only starting to do now in 2022. Yeah. And you're talking six, seven, eight years ago. And, and it sounds like they didn't really push back too much. They were okay with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in America, especially in tech companies, the digital nomadism starts in tech companies because they don't want to lose talent, and they want to actually steal talent from other places. And that was their weapon. That was their tool to use. Okay, remote work, come to us. So that's exactly what happened with me. And it was happening at that time in tech companies. Now it's catching mainstream companies or all other roles, you can say. But back then, yes, tech companies.
That's so cool. Wow. So you have this experience, you quit your job. I guess you've saved up a little bit of money at least, and you moved to Rio de Janeiro. Were you doing anything, or was that just like exploring, you're not working, you're taking a break?
That is also another learning I learned about myself, that after 4 days of sipping margaritas on Rio de Janeiro beach and, you know, shaking my booty and some parties, on the fifth day, on Thursday morning, I'm like, okay, well, now what? Like, I mean, because when you know, and working in America, you become workaholic. You're intellectual, like you have cravings to do something. You have intellectual needs to work, to do, to create, to produce. You have this itch, which is not good, but you need to calm down and relax. But I had that working many years, you know. So I started making a documentary from my cell phone. I said I would call it a cell phone documentary, and I will start, you know, making, you know, small interviewing the tech startups, because I really, after working in tech and as an entrepreneurial background, I had this itch to do something tech this time, you know, to build a tech product or something. So I started interviewing these entrepreneurs wherever I travel. So that gives me a little bit of purpose of my traveling and excitement to connect again, network, to build the network as well. So I did the 6 countries and South America, and I built amazing connections in the startup scene. And that's what I learned about Startup Chile, which will I will tell you, that was the first startup accelerator visa that we went in. But yeah, I did this traveling, and then I went back to Vancouver. And then I applied, started my job, because I did training, money's running out, so what now? And that's where I got a job offer from Salesforce. And they said, okay, we are ready to make you an offer. But I decided to not pursue that recruitment process. And instead, I moved to Berlin.
Wow.
Yes. Driving force, to be honest, I think weather, the climate, can make you do dramatic things. So I went back to Vancouver. It was middle of the winter, rainy, dark, cold. And I'm like, okay, am I going to work again here, doing the same thing at 6 a.m. and coming back? That give me flashback of Toronto. I'm like, nah, I ain't doing that. Let's go to Berlin. It's going to be cold, but at least it's Berlin, something hip, tech startups. I think I want to do tech startups, so that's the place to be. And I moved to Berlin using the work. Okay, at that point, I have a Canadian citizenship. That gives you another freedom to travel. It was a strategy and to open the world, and that I had a freedom to apply for 1 year working holiday visa, and I moved there.
Wow. And so when you went to Berlin, is that when you started to think about building Visa
yes.
DB?
Yeah. So at that point, I'm still managing the community, which maybe you or your audience don't know, that I also am a co-founder of the biggest community of digital nomads on Facebook. It's actually a Facebook group. So at that point, while doing this, I am also managing the community and thinking about problems I could solve. And I'm noticing in my community, the visa, this word is keep coming again and again. Visa, immigration, how can I move there? What are my options? These were the themes mm-hmm. I noticed. And in Berlin, after living in Berlin, partying, connecting with tech startups, I thought, okay, I decided the problem I'm going to solve is going to be a visa problem. How I'm going to solve, I don't know, but it should be in a visa and immigration space. Because of my immigration background, I'm an immigrant and tech background, and I'm like, and digital nomads also have this problem. So I thought that I should attack on it. So that was the start of Visa DB ideation phase.
And just to back up for a moment, the Facebook group is called Digital Nomads World. Is that right?
Digital Nomads Around the World.
Digital Nomads Around the World. And how many members is there now or at the peak?
Yeah. It's 149,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the biggest group. And it took us like 6 years. The same the time I quit. This is the whole same time I was managing this community, and we were sharing these experiences. Everybody was there. So it's like, to be honest, like a family. And I met some people yesterday, actually, in Brazil. I'm in Brazil right now, and most of the digital nomads are coming in here. It's like a top of the town, this island here. So a lot of us are here. So yeah, so that was the start of the Visa DB. And I will tell you more about Visa DB. Yeah.
I think this is a great opportunity. So you go to Berlin on a work holiday visa, and you are, what are you doing there?
Yeah, so I was actually enjoying and freelancing to make some money. I was consulting a startup into marketing and sales because I have a degree and this experience. So, and I'm in the community, so people kind of give me, hey, can you help us to strategize or tell us, just share some ideas. So consulting few hours, not a lot. And then I started working on this idea of Visa DB. And I thought that coming from a very humble background, I have a thing to serve. This is in the blood, to serve first. Or in working in tech company and Microsoft, I learned to create more value than you take. Mm-hmm. That was the philosophy I learned. So I'm like, okay, I can start offering immigration services first. That's a business, but first I need to serve. I'm here to serve. You know, that's the karma yoga as well. So I thought that I should solve a problem. People are looking for information. That's a problem. So let me create a database first where anyone can go enter their citizenship, and we show them all the requirements, all the visa options available for them. So they don't need to browse this very complex government website. Sometimes they're very bad experiences and not mobile friendly. So that was my project. After starting it 5 months in, I realized that I took a very difficult challenge, because all the government websites so much complex issue, and I wanted to do it for the whole world. That's the problem with digital nomads, because they're traveling around the world, so everything, their perspective is global. And we are a global citizen, we want to solve the global problems, we feel for global crisis. So I wanted to do it for every citizen on the planet, wherever they come from, doesn't matter. So mistake, I would say, I can say it's mistake. Ambitions, like ambitions are big, but resources have to be there as well. I learned that. So this took a very long time to just finish the database part. But now we launched it and it went straight viral, because there is nothing like this exist. And this is about, it's 2017 end and 2018 start. That's that time. And it went viral. HuffPost did a story. We got 100,000 visitors in 24 hours. Servers are running down. Typical startup story. It's just that we don't have a business model. Like, this is the thing. Like, we wanted to build something people is helpful for people. So the story started, and we, you know, and then we thought, okay, we got enough data and traction. Now we should look for funding. And that's where we applied in a startup Chile program, and which is the top prestigious startup accelerator in the world. They have a, like, they have acceptance rates of less than 1% acceptance rate. So if 1,000 startups apply, they only accept 80. So we applied it, and the decision makers understood what I'm trying to do on a global scale. They accepted it straight away. We went into that program, made tons of mistakes, tons of problems. And after that, we needed more resources. So we applied in another accelerator program in Europe, this time in Poland, called Poland Prize. They accepted us as well. We pivoted again. We learned. And we also went through MIT Accelerator Program, which is the very prestigious in Europe, in Poland. So all these three prestigious accelerators program taught me, not as a worker, but as a tech founder, not even a founder, like a tech founder, how to pivot, how to move fast. Because by the time you finish, market has already gone so far. This thing. So these three startups and many pivots, we were ready. We had some major clients, because the business model at that time was selling the data, because we are the database. We have the most up-to-date information. Why not sell this data to airlines? So we were talking to Air China, I shouldn't say United Airlines. We were talking to major airlines, and we were also, with the help of Plug and Play Ventures, which is a Silicon Valley accelerator, they were the last supporter of our project, and they accepted us. They connected us these major airlines. They are testing our solutions. We're talking to major companies. And then the COVID hit us with the baseball bat.
Oh my God. Oh man.
Boom. So this, I mean, they did not, they were like, we don't know. Let's wait. We are not spending any money on anything, innovation or anything. Added on value. So let's wait. And we couldn't, we need to survive. We need this funding. So we couldn't survive that. So we needed to kill that and pivot it. And now I went into my favorite part. Hey, you know, why don't we connect again? The networking, people have information now, but if they need to connect with expert, a verified expert, there is no option. There are lawyer firms, they're running their own agency. But if someone wants to hire cross-border, for the cross-border transaction, there is no sort of vetted transparency and trust. So why cannot I solve that? So now VisaDB is a marketplace to hire global immigration and now tax expert, because I just added tax because of the digital nomads. We are having major tax problems. So, and also I told you my story that I couldn't leave North America. So I knew that tax is a thing, but so immigration is the major part. And we have now 67 countries covered. We have experts from 67 countries. They all are verified by me, some many in person, actually, because wherever I travel, I try to meet. And it's surprising that how digital we become. But real have a different, real meeting in real person have a different sense and different vibe somehow. And so that's where we are. COVID actually didn't help us at all. It actually killed all the growth and progress we were making. But now the world is opening and things have started to coming out. Last month, we generated 100,000 visitors and a month, and we generated about 300-400 inquiries for different experts. Mm-hmm. And so that was the last month data. So this looks promising. And I think the more we're open, we will get back to the business transfer. Students are moving away. Immigrants are moving. Digital nomads are moving. And that might create more opportunities for us.
That's awesome. You know, it's also kudos to you for not just shutting down when COVID hit and going back to getting a normal job, but instead thinking, all right, how can we make the best of this? All right, yeah. Our existing business model is not going to work, but there are other problems that we may be able to solve. Yes. Super cool. You know, it's interesting how COVID has impacted the global immigration industry. You know, on the one hand, I remember in the very beginning of COVID, I spoke to some immigration lawyers that said, Roman, I think I'm going to shut down my law firm. I mean, you know, it's the borders are closed, travel is halted. I need my clients, you know, are dependent on travel. And then slowly it turned out that, well, first of all, there were a lot of exceptions. People still traveled during COVID. There was still a lot of cross-border movement, number one. And number two, the constant updates and changes in the law required more attorney analysis. And so now they had different work. It was same industry, but different work. And so, you know, this is the same kind of a thing where, you know, you kind of pivot within the industry, but just doing something a little bit different. My question to you is, digital nomad visas were not a thing a few years ago.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, it's slowly Croatia. There's some few countries that really pioneered it. Now there are dozens of countries that provide opportunities for digital nomads to work more easily. You don't have to, you know, force your way into an existing visa category. Yeah. You have a really nice one that's now made for us, for digital nomads. Yeah. How has that impacted your what you do with Visa DB at all? I mean, you are a digital nomad.
Yeah, you'll be surprised that I am personally involved with the many visas, actually, with governments. I work closely with them. As a part of the biggest community, everybody who's doing something, they come to us. They, you know, ask us to collaborate. So I am closely work with Estonia, with Curacao, with Brazil right now. I, you know, yesterday we hosted the mayor, the official from the Rio de Janeiro, and they talk about the Rio Digital Nomads program. So they want us to, of course, include some, not all. And I encourage every government official that talk to your target audience, which is digital nomads. And we are the biggest community. Come to us. And we are not like we want to charge. No, we are offering free volunteer consultancy to come to us so that you can create visas which can help my people, right? I have 149,000 people and I, you know, so we did a lot of work, volunteer work to lobby to create these visas for us digital nomads. And now we are, to be honest, working to create awareness and education to solve taxes. Please don't make a tax an issue to not let your employer work from anywhere. So that is our next agenda. And we are working to create awareness, to be honest, just education to the government officials that all companies as well. Companies are still, you'll be surprised, Roman, that they're pretty old school in their mind. They don't want to allow their employees. They want to offer them Coca-Cola fridge at the office, but they don't want to allow them to work from anywhere they want. So that's what we are working. This community, I do a lot of work through this community to advance our agenda of digital nomads, like taxes and visas and other issues we address. So yeah, that's how I know them. And also VisaDB Index. VisaDB is the only website which indexes all the digital nomad visas in the world. So if anybody's watching it, you want to browse how many digital nomad visas are there, go to VisaDB. It's free, no sign up required. You click visas, you click digital nomads, you can see all the countries.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's becoming so much more popular, you know, both for freelancers and, to your point, corporate employees too. Some companies are allowing their employees to work from wherever. And it's not, like you said, it used to be maybe more so just tech people. Now it's any role. You can be in operations, you can be in support. I mean, there's so many different roles where you don't need to be physically anywhere. You could be wherever you want to be. Well, let me ask you this. What sort of pushback do you hear from the industry around letting employees specifically, forget about digital nomads who work for themselves, fine. If there's an option, it's the only issue is whether or not they want to get on the plane and fly there. But in terms of companies, you know, allowing their employees to work remotely and using a digital nomad visa as the way to get there instead of sending them to the UK office or sending them to the Brazil office, they just say, listen, we don't care what office you're in, go and you use a digital. Do you see pushback? Do you see any issues with that? Because it feels to me that I would think companies want to control the whole visa process. But with digital nomad visa, it feels a little bit more sort of open. And I would imagine that there are challenges with that. What do you see there?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the community, we get a lot of different issues. And I would also address, because as a founder, I understand the company's point of view as well. Where are they coming from? And I totally understand. It has a cost of regulations, fines, you know, and like a right tax code, because if you're working abroad, which you're not supposed to, there could be some implications. And you have complex business contracts companies have, especially multi-international companies. So even if you're on a digital nomad visa and you're getting paid from that employer, you might be considered. So there are some, because every country is different. But I would like to say that there are solutions. You know, there are companies coming up with the solutions, with the software, like companies like Deel and Remote. I'm not sure if your audience know them. They are your one-stop shop to hire global employees. They take care of all the paperwork, all the documentation. You don't need to worry about them. I mean, this is not maybe the ideal solution for everyone, but I'm just saying that there are solutions coming out. So the pushback is, to be honest, the regulation, extra work. But some of that pushback, I would say, is also sort of uninformed and traditional, you know, coming from the past, because in the past it wasn't never an issue. So there's something new coming up. So they don't know. So it's convenient to just say, oh, no, we're not going to allow, because it saves them the hassle, the cost. And of course, they don't see any incentive for themselves. Of course, I can debate in the whole new webinar that what benefits it brings to the table, even as terms of return on investment or profits, if they allow their employees to work remotely.
That's right. And of course, right now in the battle for talent, like you said, if one company says you have to go to the office in Toronto, and then the other company says you want to go to Brazil, you want to work out of Rio or Estonia, you know, it may attract a certain type of person to say, I want to live anywhere. Oh.
I think, Roman, after COVID, I think it will attract 90% of the population, because they have seen the alternative, because we were living for 60 years. It will be another webinar when we talk about the four-day work week. This is a new revolution. We are also pushing it. But we are living our work, how we live and work. It's from the Ford. Ford decided that there should be a weekend, you know? So from 100-year-old, we are working and living like 100-year-old models. So it needs to be changed. And COVID showed people, or woke them up, that, hey, there is another alternative way of living where you don't have to work a lot, where you can work from anywhere. So now 90% people, I would say, based on the community I'm dealing with, there is a certain degree of people who wants to go to office. Surprisingly, I was really, really surprised. But of course, there is two types of people. So most of the people wants to go. And the way I switch companies back like 6 and 7 years ago, I did it. So now your talent will leave. If they haven't left, that means they haven't got the opportunity to work from anywhere yet.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And the other option is, if they don't find the opportunity anywhere, and if a company doesn't present them, they might quit and start their own business just to have the freedom to be able to live anywhere or work from anywhere.
I think values change. As you said, the values has changed. Work has taken the back seat. Life experience has come forward, and that is leading the decision-making process.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So today, visadb.io, and by the way, DB is short for database, I guess, is the initial was the initial idea. So visadb.io connects, I guess it helps digital nomads or people who are interested in becoming digital nomads connect with experts from around the world. And I think when I saw on the website, there's also an option for, I guess, corporates to also explore that. Is there a difference in the service? I just want to learn a little bit more about the company so that if people are watching or listening, they can know it's for them.
Yes, absolutely. It's for both, to be honest, for business or individuals. I manage the community of digital nomads, so that's why I'm focusing on individuals as well. And I also see a trend, which you already mentioned, There will be, I see it, there will be an increased relocation, which employees will be doing themselves, which you also mentioned the point, right? It's much easier, and companies would be very open if individual is doing the relocation themselves. So that's why it's for both, but it, originally it's supposed to be for B2B only, but after the COVID, and we see that trend, so we created it's for both individuals and B2B. It's the same service. We are not solving the whole journey of the relocation process or creating a software to track the relocation process. We are first, we are solving to connect with the incredible service providers and offer multiple pricing options. That's why it's marketplace. So companies can shop. And because that is will be the next agenda in managers' mind to reduce the cost of relocation. So that's where we want to get them and show them, hey, we got the offer. We will connect them. After that, you want to use any tooling, feel free.
So the idea would be that somebody comes onto the website, they might look at all the different digital nomad visas that are available, and they'll say, okay, I'm interested in Barbados. And so they find a visa professional or an immigration or tax professional through VisaDB who may maybe do a consultation with them. And then they can book them right through VisaDB. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So two things we're doing. One is the connection part, the transparency for the cross-border connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So it's like an Uber or different, all the marketplaces. So you can search the visa or you can directly search the expert. You can go and say, hey, search expert for, let's say, Barbados. And it VisaDB show you the existing services there. And they can see the pricing. They can see what's included in that service. They can click chat, and they will start chatting with the expert. And if they are ready to buy after chatting, if they think that, you know, it makes sense, they can either book a paid consultation or hire a full service and pay through VisaDB, transfer secure documents through VisaDB, and a few other features we have. So payments and documents are the most important things, you know, transferring. So, you know, so there is a software part as well, or case management part, but very basic.
Nice. That's interesting. Cool. Man, really exciting, especially given where the world is going with again, remote work and digital nomads increasing both on the individual side and then, of course, corporate digital nomads. I mean, it's a whole new category that really didn't even exist before. So I'm curious, you know, kind of as we wrap up, where I know you're seeing a lot more interest on the corporate side. Where do you want, I don't know if it's going this way or not, but where do you want VisaDB to go in the future? You know, what are you thinking about in terms of the growth of the company as the industry progresses?
Yes. So first thing, coverage. That's my focus. So we should be focusing on certain countries. A lot of people are doing it. Direct lawyers are offering. Lawyers are getting a good in marketing thanks to you, Rowan. You're guiding them because I think the next few years it will be all about marketing. Tech era is done. When I was writing this last 5 years, that was a tech era. If you're all about tech, I think next 5 or 10 years is all about marketing and finding your customer. So that's where we want to get in, and we want to position ourselves as a global marketplace. You can hire wherever you come from. You can hire an expert anywhere in the world, and you will have not one option. You will have multiple options you can hire. So that's our goal with VisaDB, to make it a global platform, like an Upwork or like an Uber for immigration. Mm-hmm. So that's the vision I'm leading. But also I want to share with your audience that we have a lot of tools we created free. So Visa Database is not the only one. They can see the global skills demand, historical migration data, talent relocation, where the talent is moving from where. We have visualizations, which nobody has created. It's all free. And so that is another vision, to create data sets or data visualizations, which are easier to understand for corporates, managers, and especially immigration lawyers as well. So they can use this data intelligence to grow their businesses or, you know, cut the cost.
That's awesome. Yeah. Because I think sometimes it might take some convincing for corporates to allow their employees. And if they see the patterns, they see the trends, et cetera, maybe they'd say, oh, wow, so many people are moving from X part of the world to Y part of the world. We better allow our employees to work in Y part of the world or else they'll leave, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, this is the biggest, you know, fear. Because I think it's a right fear as well, because they will.
I mean, you know, the great resignation. I mean, these terms have been coined for a reason. There are a lot of people switching jobs in large part because they want flexibility somewhere else. And so, you know, I'm not one for fear mongering. I don't think selling from a place of fear is good. But this is not fear. This is a reality. Yeah. You know, it's not made up. Absolutely. So, Dinesh, this has been really, really exciting. And, you know, thank you for sharing your story, your journey and everything you've done. And also your lows too, right? Like how you were moving and you're gaining momentum. And then, like you said, COVID hit you guys like a baseball bat. So it's important to remember that everything, the story is not all ups. There are also downs. And it's definitely important to remember that. I like to sort of end on maybe kind of a more fun or lighthearted note. So how many countries have you been to so far?
It's a very good question, but I honestly don't know the number. I have to sit down and count because during COVID, I was traveling throughout COVID. I mean, longer periods, and I have lived in longer periods. So I would say 30 plus for sure, for sure. And cities, also there are different types of digital nomads. I'm a slow mad. I call myself a slow mad, which travels slowly because I have to work full time as well. Mm. So cities, a lot of them, maybe 100 cities, I think. But 30 plus countries, 100 cities, yeah.
So, all right, if I talk to this, if I ask you about the cities, if I, right now, I force you, what's the top city, you know, that has this memory for you that you will never forget from your time traveling? Yes.
Okay, so it's normally every city has some uniqueness. I know we are running fast, so I would say for party, two, Medellin and Rio de Janeiro, of course, for parties, for fun, you know, vibe. For work-wise, you'd be surprised at Warsaw and Berlin, I would say, for tech startup scene. These are my favorites. But again, I normally don't have a favorite because every city has some unique story I have that I will make you fall in love with that city.
Fair enough. I like that. You're fair. You don't want the world. There's no favorites.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dinesh. I'll let you go get back to maybe partying or maybe working, I don't know, in Rio de Janeiro. Thank you so much for being here, you know, for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. And, you know, best of luck. We'll be excited to hear about how things progress with VisaDB and, of course, watching how things change in the industry as well.
Sure. Roman, I really appreciate it for your time, for giving me a chance and asking an incredible question. It's showing interest, to be honest. I've never given that open interview or talk to about my life anywhere in my whole entrepreneur. So credit goes to you. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. I appreciate that.